He used to wet the bed, but now he doesn't. So let's have a slumber party. Oh.
Hello, wonderful slumber party listeners. Thank you so much for joining us and welcome back. I am very, very excited today because I have such a talented, such a funny, and such a wonderful, kind soul of a guest, somebody that I met through my gay boyfriend when they were on tour together in Aladdin. She played Jasmine. Have you ever heard of the role of Jasmine in Aladdin? On Broadway and on tour. She also originated the role of Alyssa Green in The Prom on Broadway, and she was recently seen in Fly at La Jolla. Ever heard of San Diego? Please welcome to the stage, Isabel McCullough.
Hi, bunnies. Thank you for having me.
I love that you say bunnies. When we came to see you in The Prom afterwards, I was so starstruck. I was like, oh my God. I was like, look at her up there on that Broadway stage killing it. And then we saw you afterwards and be like, hi, bunnies. I was like, I feel so special and so cool right now.
Oh, I'm so glad. I don't know what I'm trying to say right now. Except that
do any of us in this loaded world?
No, I feel like my brain has just completely lost the thread of every conversation I ever get in. But point being, yeah, like on stage is one thing, but I love reconnecting with old friends and making that the important bit, not the accolades and tell me how good I am, you know?
The important bit for me is the Christmas present you got me when you're on tour in, I want to say 2017 or 2018. We barely knew each other at that point. Because you had been doing the tour with Michael, but when I was visiting my gay boyfriend, I would mostly just hang out with him and not hang out with you guys that much. And then you were having like a little cast Christmas party and you all graciously invited me. Do you remember what you got me?
Socks. Which ones did I get you? I don't remember which ones I gave to you.
I'm pretty sure they had little hamburgers on them.
Yeah, that's right.
And you were like, I don't really know you that well, but I figured, who doesn't like socks? And burgers, and you were right. And you know what?
Yeah.
I wear them all the time.
Amazing. I'm so happy. I'm thrilled that it is a useful gift. I was actually just thinking about this and talking about this earlier today. I think socks are the great equalizer. I mean, like, it's everybody always talks about, you know, when you're a kid, you joke and you're like, I don't want to get socks for Christmas. It's boring. But like, as I've gotten older, I genuinely get so stoked when I see a new pair of socks in my stocking. So like, I wanted to spread that love and joy with you all.
You really did. You really did. This year, I got a pair of fuzzy socks, and it's like, especially in this hellhole we're living in where you like can't leave your house, what a nice little joy is to put on a little bit of something comfy on your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really, really lovely and literally warming, heartwarming and foot warming. And
literally,
I'm wearing fuzzy socks right now.
Oh, really, my God, look at them go. How, yeah. Loaded question, how are you?
Yes. How much time do we have? Are you my therapist now? Is this what's going on? No.
Yes, I am.
Great. So today is January 7th, which yesterday was the season finale of America. Mm-hmm. And my brain is exhausted. I am exhausted. I feel like I didn't drink anything yesterday, and yet I feel like so emotionally hungover, so tired, not surprised whatsoever. I'm obviously talking about the domestic terrorists storming the Capitol building yesterday, and our democracy being.
I'm glad you said what it was, because it's great that you said January 7th, but this will probably come out in like two weeks, and right. Who knows what fucking shitstorm we will have experienced. Like, people are gonna be like January 7th. Oh, that was the first of like, I hate to put it out into the universe, but likely many insane things that are going to happen in 2021.
God,
this is,
I hope not. I know.
Crazy.
Invoke the 25th. I hope when this comes out, Get him, I hope Biden's sworn in, but
fuck
like
out of there.
Get him the. Get him out.
Get him out of here. Get out of here.
I like flames on the side of my face. Breathing, heaving. I get so, I mean, him, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Mitch McConnell. I mean, Mitch McConnell was the, what kind of world are we living in where Mitch McConnell is the voice of reason? You know, he said in his statement, not a good one, never a good one. Like, and don't get me wrong, I do not forgive him for anything because I think he's still evil as all hell. However, at least he said trying to overturn this election would end in a death spiral of democracy, which I appreciated, even though I still hate his guts. So I am feeling, how am I? I'm angry. I am not surprised. I'm saddened. I don't have much remorse or love for those who voted for Trump, who voted for his supporters and enabled him, who have perpetuated these conspiracy theories. And because we are unemployed, as it is a pandemic, and we are actors, I mean, most of us are unemployed and just sitting in our fuzzy socks in our rooms. Uh-huh. That's all I can think about, because we are directly affected by the government and their policies, and anyone who thinks differently is very ignorant. And I am losing patience, and I don't want to, but I am.
I don't blame you. I don't think anyone can blame you at this point. And yeah. Isn't it crazy that we once, it's crazy to think that we once lived in a world where you could even say that, oh, politics doesn't really affect me. Like,
yeah, this truly.
This has deeply affected us for a long time. But mm-hmm. I think we're mm-hmm. really, our generation is really seeing the effects hardcore right now. And I mean, every person of color in America is deeply seeing the effects, and what kind of like horrible shitstorm it is to see white people just traipse through the Capitol building with no repercussions,
no sort of planning ahead of time. Apparently Muriel Bowser, the DC mayor, had asked for National Guard to come in, yes, like 2 days before. She was the one who was like, guys, no. We really need to. Yeah, she was. I'm pretty sure. I have to double check my sources there, but I was listening to a podcast. I think it was The Daily that was talking about that she had asked for backup before. And the thing is, like, the fact that, like, the Trump administration does, I mean, obviously it's a group of white supremacists, but they don't recognize that as a threat. I mean, it's so indicative. It was just white supremacy on display, running rampant in all its fuckery.
Yeah.
So I, it's very scary and dangerous and not shocking whatsoever as a person of color in this world, or if you are a woke human who is trying to pay attention to what is going on, because this is like, the causality is very clear.
It's so very clear. And I think, yeah, I'm glad that you're sharing this, and I know that this sucks and is painful, but I really hope anyone listening to this podcast, welcome Broadway listeners, we want Broadway.
Happy slumber party.
Happy slumber party, indeed. We get deep at the slumber party, and it's good. But I think it's important, because the world will reopen, and we can't wait for that to happen, thank God. But when it does, we have to be armed with this kind of knowledge of, you know, like as you said, for the non-woke white people out there, you gotta listen. Like, I have to listen. We all, even as someone who hopefully identifies as a woke white person, like, we have to keep having these conversations and figure it the fuck out, because this is such a snowball effect, and I really do think it deeply affects every single side of our lives. And like Izzy was saying, we're unemployed. We want to get back on the stage and entertain you and make you feel good. And we don't want to be having these conversations. We don't want to, like, I want to talk to Izzy about what is her favorite YouTube video. But now we're like, so, I mean, I will admit, I just spent the last like 3 hours kind of walking around to hype myself up for this conversation, because I've been deeply, deeply depressed. It's tough.
But I think that's important. and that's good. That I don't want you to be depressed. I don't want anybody to be depressed. But I think we have a sensitivity problem, and we need to. It's good that we feel all of this very deeply and viscerally, and understand the pain and the suffering. I mean, it's just like, this is who we've always been. That's why it's not. It's a lie when people are saying, this is not the America that we are, that we know. And it's like, no, it is, because we have to accept all of it. It's not just the good stuff. You can't just erase a part of your history. You can't erase a part of your identity. I think, like, I mean, that's something I've been exploring within myself spiritually, is like celebrating multiplicity, right? And like the duality, the fact that we exist in multitudes, that we are not a monolith, that we can feel things differently and we can act differently from day to day, but all those versions of ourselves are still ourselves. So like, we don't get a free pass, and it's on all of us. We are all complicit in this. We all partake in the society. So how are we going to move forward? And I'm not at that moving forward stage yet, clearly, because I'm still talking about the, I mean, it just happened for us, but I mean,
we're so hungover still and so raw from it. You can't heal something that is still in shock from the pain.
Like, yes, exactly.
I'm glad you said that about feeling it. And I agree. I mean, who wants people to be depressed? No one. But we do want all of us to feel this, because especially in a time when so many people are numbing right now, because it's a lot of our only escape from just these four walls in our apartments, unless you're a gay guy who wanted to go to Puerto Vallarta and absolutely live your New Year's Eve dreams.
Oh my God, the dragging that happened.
Wait. Okay, I'm gonna throw an absolute exclusive story out at you right now, and I may have to cut it, but I want to tell you because contributing to my major depression. So there's everything going on in the world in the news, which has been horrible, and that news broke about a half an hour before I had to do a comedy bit on two of my heroes' podcast.
No!
Are you familiar with Alaska and Willem from Drag Race?
Yes, I am.
I was asked to go on their podcast yesterday and pretend to be the Instagram handle of Gays Over COVID. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
For those of you who don't know what this is, it's like someone is exposing all of the gay, mostly white gay guys who are giving no fucks about COVID and just hanging out with each other and not wearing masks and super spreading. And there's a lot of debate around whether this is good for any community or whether it's virtue signaling or whether it is accountability or it's shaming. Right. And if it's actually going to help people change their minds, there's a lot in there and a lot to debate. I think it's at the very minimum, funny that they are just taking these pictures. Like, if people are stupid enough to post pictures of themselves partying right now while the rest of us are sitting in our homes, then, you know, part of me feels like, well, you probably deserve to get dragged. But then the other part of me is like, well, also, I also know these accounts can take things too far and things can get scary and stalkery and weird. So,
good point.
All that to say, I went on their podcast. The producer is a friend of mine, and he was like, come on, write an SNL weekend update bit and come on, and we're going to surprise them. I surprised them. They didn't understand what was happening. They thought I was the real person. And I was just doing like a weekend update character bit with a Batman mask on, because I was told to hide myself in the shadows, and because it was supposed to be like they weren't supposed to know who I am. Were so disturbed. They were like,
oh my God.
Imagine just doing jokes that you've worked really hard on over and over and over again to failure in front of your heroes. Their faces were like, what is happening?
Oh, Tam.
It was. Oh. I ended it by apologizing. I was like, I'm so sorry.
Did somebody ever tell them it was supposed to be a joke, but that you weren't the guy?
the producer and I both apologized, and he was like, I don't think this really went how we wanted it to go. And at the end, they were like, oh, it's a bit. Oh, we thought you were the real person. We were so confused. But imagine doing a bit in front of somebody and just having it like bomb over and over and over.
Oh, that just hurts my soul so deeply. I'm so sorry. How long was this bit too? Like, how long did you have to feel this suffering?
Okay, so I would say I wrote a full page of jokes, and then it got cut down to about a quarter of a page for the bit, which was probably 5 minutes. But in the moment, it was going so badly that I cut it to probably half of what it was.
Right. Oh, my God. Oh, God. Are they going to air it?
I don't know. I asked them not to. And the producer was like, well, we'll see if we can salvage it. And I was like, okay.
Oh, no. You know what's going to happen, though? You are going to meet Alaska and Willem at some party down the road. And you're going to be like, yakking it up, and you will harken back to the time and be like, hey, remember that time I wore a Batman mask and completely disturbed you both?
And they will be like, girl, yes, we do. They were so gracious. They were so nice. It was just kind of like a perfect storm of bad things happening. Like, no one is really to blame other than maybe me for not seeing that the ship was sinking and not... which also happened in Puerto Vallarta, shout out. I think I was really nervous in front of them, and so I was like speeding through the jokes, and I could have stopped and recognized that they didn't understand that it was a bit and explained that, and then kept going. So I do think this is very much on me. Yeah, we'll laugh about it one day. But also, it was literally, I was like just looking at the news, and it was like, oh, white supremacist terrorists, they weren't, the news wasn't saying that, but should have been, are storming the Capitol building. And then I started on their Zoom call with them without them knowing I was there. And then I surprised them after we'd all just seen like trauma being inflicted upon the nation. So they were not in the mood. I was not in the mood. It was bad.
Okay. That's... You came out on the other side.
I'm still kicking, you know?
You're still kicking.
I live to
you're
see another
still
day.
Here!
I'm still here.
Look. Oh, God. Oh, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for letting me share that. This is the first time I've laughed about it. I've shared it with like three close friends, and it was mostly tears. But this, now I'm feeling...
I'm so sorry. That's a good thing. Like, time can heal. It's funny. I was with my friend Ellie, and we were having a good night, let's say. And we were playing, not sexually, I mean otherwise, we were
board
doing
games,
a puzzle.
Not sex. Yeah, board there
games.
It is.
Yes, exactly. We were doing a puzzle and watching watching CNN, and we got to the point of the night where we were just like fully laughing at the fuckery, and just, I mean, we were watching the point where they were voting aye and nay, and I didn't realize, because it was the first time I'd actually ever watched a vote happen in Congress, that when they ask if there are any objections, and there are none, they say hearing none. But I didn't hear hearing none. I heard hearing aye. And I was like, what's hearing aye? I thought it was like this like charge. So every time they started saying, we'd be like, hearing aye. And it was like a drinking thing. Hearing aye. And just like, and then she stopped and she was like, Izzy, we are also still in a pandemic, which I forgot. I forgot that we are in the midst of a global pandemic.
You have trauma sandwiched on top of your other trauma and to make you forget that trauma in the middle.
Truly. And then at some point, all you can do is laugh. That's literally all you can do.
Hearing
eye.
Hearing eye.
Take it with you.
My gay bunny told me that you are a puzzle person. He told me that you love puzzles. Were you a puzzle person in, like, at slumber parties growing up? Where did this come from?
I think it came from like my family growing up. Like we were big on puzzles, and like usually on like holidays or birthdays, we would do a puzzle as a family, like sitting around the table and
cute.
Christmas Day or New Year's Day. Yeah, it was fun. And I my brain really likes them, and it feels so satisfying when you get a piece right in the spot. And then there's the extra exhilaration where you pick up a piece and it's like your body knows exactly where it goes. And without like much looking, you just, and you're like, whoa, what spirit overtook my body here and just made this magic happen. So it's like it's a really lovely experience for me. And when we were in Chicago doing the Aladdin tour, I had this beautiful big dressing room at the base of the staircase in the Cadillac Theater. And my way of getting people to talk to me was I would have my door open and I'd have a puzzle table in the center of it. And so people would come in like on breaks, before half hour, at half hour, and I'd always have a puzzle going. And it was usually like 1,000 pieces or 2,000 pieces. And it was so fun because it became this like cast bonding experience. One time our stage manager stole like 25 pieces and put it in his envelope and I in this envelope in his desk, and I was livid.
To prank you?
Yes, to prank me. There were a lot of pranks that went on, which I love desperately. I wasn't mad, but I mean, you know, I was a little irritated. But yeah, it was part of the fun. I don't remember how he, I think I got to a point where I was like, where the fuck are these pieces? And he heard me saying that and was like, and just like shook the envelope of pieces at me. He was like, I thought you'd come looking for them. And I'd be like, how would I know that you were the one to steal them, Mr. Stage Manager?
How would
supposed
I know?
To be keeping everything together.
talk about making someone feel paranoid. How was I supposed to know that someone yeah. My first instinct was not someone probably came in here and fucking
yeah,
stole
truly.
These pieces.
The leaps you have to go to in your brain right. to think, ah, yes, this is the correct assumption.
Unless it was me, because that is kind of what I always do. I'm like, where
yeah.
the fuck are my keys? Michael, you took yeah. my keys. And then he's yeah. like, they're in your other piss pocket, you asshole.
But then sometimes there would be like a note that'd be like, haha, looking for something. And then I'd be like, and then you'd have to figure out who it was that took our prank. Yeah, I left my door open a lot. I made myself vulnerable. That's fair. But anyway, I love puzzles. it's a healing community bonding experience for me.
I know that I would love to be at a slumber party with you right now and doing some puzzles.
I would love to do that.
Wouldn't that be so too. Fun? I am really bad at them. I'm very impatient. And I don't. We got a puzzle on Christmas because there was nothing else to do. So we went to Rite Aid and got a puzzle. And we made it about 20 minutes into this puzzle. And I said, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. And then we put it away. I said, absolutely not. I'm not doing this.
So we played
Battleship instead.
Oh, you know, I've actually never played Battleship. I've done the puzzle Battleship, the one where you write it out, but I haven't played the board game.
Oh, you gotta play. It's one of the greatest pastimes.
I do.
It's really fun.
I definitely do.
My
I do
mother...
love games. Like,
oh, yeah, go ahead. What games do you love?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. Jenga is a big one I love. I used to be... Clue. Clue is a big one in our family, too. It's a lot of mystery solving things. I'm seeing a theme here.
I love my own mystery life. Solving. Do you like mystery solving TV or movies?
Yes, I do.
Did you watch
I
The Flight Attendant?
Like, no, not yet. I need to good. I need to watch it.
It's so good. It's
okay, okay,
so
we'll
good.
Do.
I think we watched it in like 24
amazing.
Hours. That and The Undoing. Did you watch The Undoing?
I watched The Undoing. That was good. It was really good.
That was
it's
good.
Always the fucking husband. Sorry, if
I love when she. So I love when she said that. Lily Rabe, one of
so
our greatest
good.
American theater actresses. It's always the fucking husband.
She's amazing. I love
so
her.
Good. So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you an American Horror Story person?
I was. I stopped after Roanoke, which was I loved that season. But
really?
Yeah. It took me a while.
I stopped at the Lady Gaga one. I was like, I think that's going to be enough for me. But
was that the hotel one?
Yeah. I watched like the first episode of it and I was like, I'm really missing Ms. Jessica Lange. I think I'm going
to
step
off. I mean, that was like the reason to watch it for so long, which is that she's just
so
everything.
I'm listening to Patti LuPone's audiobook right now. And she calls Jessica Lange.
Oh my God, that must be amazing.
Jessie. And it's so, it feels so good in every part of my body. I'm like, yeah.
Oh,
just call her Jessie. I love that. You besties. I love Patti LuPone so much. It's really, this book is really bringing me a lot of joy in it.
I think I read that book. What's it called again?
I forget what it's called. It's her memoir. It's like the only book.
Yeah, it's her memoir. Yeah, it's the only one. I read that. Beth Lovell, name drop. She let me borrow her copy of it. She was like, this is juicy AF. And so I read it and I lived for it.
That is so good. Can I tell you my Beth Lovell story?
Please.
I'm naturally deeply obsessed with her, as everyone should be. And I saw her in Drowsy Chaperone by myself when I was like probably 18 or 19.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to her at the stage door and had her sign my program. And I said something so asinine, like one of those things that's just like, you're like, oh, if you were only a little older, you'd know better. I said something like, I was like trying to be cool. And I was like, so you are so amazing. Is it fun every night or do you get like really bored? She looked at me and she goes, you know what? Not every show is fun every night, but this show, I pinch myself every single time. Aww. I go on stage. I never want it to end. And I like loved that so much. And like, I was like, wow, you really can do this career and really love it, is like what I took with me for a long time. And then I was doing Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and she was doing and she was friends with someone who was in the cast, and they were doing Drowsy Chaperone. So she came to see Drowsy and like say hi to her friend in our cast, and he introduced me to her, and I told her that story, and she looked me right in the eyes and she goes, damn, I'm good. That's a great lie.
That's amazing. And she's right. And even in that, like, damn, I'm good. That response is, damn, she's good.
Damn, she's good. Could we talk about comedy on Broadway for a moment?
Yeah, please. Let's go in.
I talk about this a lot on this podcast, but I rarely see a show that, like, really makes me laugh. And The Prom really had me going.
It had me going too, and that was really unprofessional of me. I would be like on stage fully cackling. I had cackling. To at one point cackling mainly because of Brooks Ashmanskas. That motherfucker.
I mean, what a fucking dream.
Oh, he is a dream. But the PTA scene was always the hardest to get through because it was the only time in the show, besides the finale, that like literally all of us were on stage at once. And it was a free for all because it was Beth's number. And then they had the core four had like their bits that they would do. Caitlin had her things that we would do. But the rest of us that were in the bleachers, we were having our own stories. We had like the conversations that would happen, the ad libs that would go. I mean, like, and the thing is that cast, everybody was funny in that cast. And it was so difficult to keep a straight face. I have the worst poker face. And I had to be like, my character had to be the most horrified at this display.
Yeah.
So I would literally be like, when I like try to swallow a laugh, I'm like, there was one time I literally had to, my friend Fernell, who was sitting next to me, I grabbed his shoulders and put him in front of my face because I could not stop laughing. Just so inappropriate.
They're all so good. You were so great in it. Brooks, I will never forget seeing Brooks in, what was that one with the tomatoes? That musical.
Something Rotten?
Yes! Something Rotten. And he played like such a like closeted gay femme hating character.
Yeah.
And I will never forget him saying like something like really homophobic and then immediately checking his nails and storming off stage. It was like the funniest. Like he said something like just like really bigoted and then immediate like femme fag. Right? It was like the way that he shimmy walked off stage was like, it's so crazy because timing is not really something you can teach in like a mm-hmm. college theater program. It just is like, to me, it's like turnout of for a dancer. It's like you either have this or you don't. And to see, we've been watching a lot of Friends and we've been dissecting like why, while Friends has like a lot of it that's very problematic in 2021. Yeah. There is undeniable chemistry between those actors. And we're like, why does this show really just work so well? And that's how I felt watching The Prom. It was like they assembled this cast of you guys that just had this chemistry and comedic understanding together.
Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, it was like what a masterclass every day. I had the luxury of not being funny in that show, so I could sit back and watch the geniuses at work. And yes, I totally agree with you. Timing cannot be taught. But what I did learn from them was presence and the way to listen to an audience, to listen to each other, to go with the flow. I mean, they didn't take themselves seriously whatsoever. They took the job seriously, but not themselves. So when like things went wrong, they made it work for them. And that was so amazing to watch. And I loved, I think that you're right, that the chemistry between the cast was incredible. And there's a trust. There's a trust that happens when you have actors that are comparable to you that like, especially those main four, they can like, they're firing on all cylinders. They know exactly how each other works back and forth. The repartee was insane, both on and off stage. It was like magic. It was magic every day. And I learned so much from being around that comedy genius. And I feel like I got really funny after that show. Like in my daily life, I gained confidence in that show that I didn't have in myself beforehand. And I feel like I just like kind of like absorbed some of it through osmosis. But then I get around them and I'm like, I just want to hear you guys make jokes because you're so funny. And I just don't.
I love that. Yeah, maybe it's not that it can be taught. It has to be absorbed. You have to like be immersed in it to feel it out, because that's so true.
Yeah.
Like there are several times when I've been hanging out with people who are really funny where the whole rest of the day I'm like, am I a king of zingers? Am I
like a... And you're on fire some days and
you're on fire. Yeah, you're like, oh okay. But it's because that kind of energy is infectious, and yeah, it can be like internalized, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, yeah, let me. So much of it for me is like what you said about them not being self-serious, leading as people, leading with fun in your life, and just deciding that anything that gets thrown at you, you are able to ping pong back is such a wonderful way, I think, to live your life.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Go.
Because what happens when you do that is that like you're not in your head, you're not thinking about how does this come off, how am I, you're not analyzing anymore, you're just responding. And the more that's, I mean, obviously the goal of like all of us actors is just to try to be as present as possible and in the moment as possible. And that's really difficult to sustain, I think, which is another reason why I love theater, is because in 8 shows, you can be shitty one night, fantastic the next, and mediocre the third day. Like it doesn't give you license to be shitty, but like it gives you the opportunity to try again and learn from and evolve. And I fucking love that about our jobs.
That's really well put. And I love what you said about confidence, because it can, that is the huge part of comedy. When people ask like, should I be taking a UCB class or a stand-up class? There's the part of it that I'm like, there's some of this that can't really be taught. Like you are either funny in your life. Like, do people tell you that you're funny? Then I think you should, might be something you should go for. But the thing that can be taught, and I think any actor can learn from those like improv or comedy classes is what you said about confidence. That's what comedy is. And that's why I bombed so badly yesterday, because I was so nervous around these. Like, I have seen Alaska make me really laugh, like really, really laugh. So to be like looking at someone in the eyes, I lost that confidence. Like, I could have turned that around. And that's what specifically all of them, but in the many shows I've seen Brooks and Beth in, it's like, wow, you really don't sit back on your heels ever. You're on your toes. Mm-mm. You're leaning forward toward the audience. Like, yeah, you're going to laugh. It's like that. It's straight up confidence. It's not backing away from a line. It's having the ability to take a huge fucking swing and make a huge choice and just wait for it. And if it doesn't come, you wait longer.
Right. Yeah.
It's so crazy. It's really, it's vulnerable. Yeah.
So vulnerable. It's horrifying.
It's horrifying.
It's amazing when it works. It's like you are an incredibly funny person, stand-up comedian, comic, period. So, and like, that's, I think, important. I love that you shared the story of you bombing, because we all bomb. We all fail. Like, and there's something to be said for like overconfidence too, because there have been times when I'm like, oh, I know how this joke's gonna go because I've thought this through. And then I like amp it out and it's just like, no. And then I just be like, okay, I'm gonna go fuck off then.
Cool. I'm gonna go just fuck right off. Yeah.
The
key to that, I think, is this is, really staying on theme for this whole podcast. Sensitivity. We are sensitive people. Like we were talking about earlier with the horrible shit going on in the world, we have to feel it. And I think what I'm trying to learn right now is I have to feel through this. I cried a lot yesterday. I've been really depressed today. Now I'm talking about it with a really lovely, easy person to talk to. And I am feeling through it. And I'm feeling better. And I'm feeling like, okay, I could get back up and do this again. If they called me and asked me to try again yesterday, I would have been like, fuck no. It's never gonna happen. But now today, I think I would consider it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. It's about taking those blows. Patti LuPone says you learn the most from failure.
Yep. Absolutely. I completely agree with that. I actually just finished Ali Wong's book, Dear Girls, and she talks about how, like, you know you're a stand-up comic when you bomb, you get off, and you want to try again. Like, that's... everybody has to fail. Like, she talks about, like, everybody should bomb multiple times in front of multiple people in order to... Because, I mean, I have so much respect for you in that stand-up world, because that is a different beast entirely. I mean...
It's not fun, I'll tell you that. First of all, I thought you were very funny in the prom and very sweet. And,
oh, thank you.
And really so wonderful to see two female leads in a gay relationship in a show. Like, it was just, oh man, it was like really, really wonderful. And my intention in this next statement is not to shade any other show, but to point out why I love the prom so much. I love Fun Home as well. Like, that was a wonderful, awesome, beautiful piece. But it is so, there's something so special about watching gay characters have fun.
Yes.
And yes, there's a huge part of your storyline specifically that was about coming out, but it was handled with such grace and such beauty. And still, you got to have so much fun. Like, you got a love song about dancing.
It's so simple and so true. It's like, I give so much to the writers, and I think they're brilliant and wonderful. And I love, there's just too much trauma porn out there for the gay narratives. And that's okay, but like, we need more stories of love stories going right, where nothing devastating happens to these characters. You know what I mean? Gay people need to see gay people succeed in order to feel like they're going to be okay.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, that was a gift to be able to end on a positive every day. And give and, hope. Just like give hope and like happiness, joy to people.
And the pressure taken off your queer character of, oh, there's other queer characters on this in this story. Like, right. there can be right. a coming out story if other people have other things going on. Other queer characters have other things Absolutely. Going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so important to me to see queer characters having fun.
Yeah. much fun.
How much have you and I laughed in the last 40 minutes of this like Zoom call? Like we have fun. Like there is joy to be had in this world. It's not all trauma. We can recognize, feel through the trauma, and then figure out how we can tell that story. And sometimes I think that's like the best kind of movie, TV show, or book, is when something is really horrifically traumatic, but someone has found a way to put such a different spin on it, whether it's like suspense or comedy. Or
I totally agree with you 100%, because like, I mean, what is there to fight for? If, you know, what is that suffering worth? We got to have something to fight for. We've got to push that narrative of like, this is why we protest. This is why we stand up. This is why we feel that despair, because we know that like we all should feel unadulterated joy and fun whenever and wherever we can, you know, and that's not a crime. It is just the purest part of being human. And the best part of being human is like the connection and the fun.
The fun, so, which brings me to my favorite segment of this podcast. Wait, let's have fun.
Let's have fun.
In this segment, we're going to play slumber party games. But before we do that, I want to know, what YouTube video would you put on if we were at a slumber party together? What do you, Izzy, want to watch with me or show me?
I went down a rabbit hole of my favorite YouTube videos, and I am so grateful that I did, because it reawakened all of the giddy parts of me. But my go-to that will make me like pee my pants laughing without fail, it's actually not a video, it's this recording of, have you seen Orchestra Fail?
No.
Should I send the link in the
send
chat?
Send it to me and tell me everything.
Okay, so Orchestra Fail was recorded. It was posted, I don't know, maybe early 2000s, 2006, 7, 11 years ago. So it's posted 11 years ago. And it is I think it's like a middle school band it may be a very terrible high school band. Maybe elementary school. I would hope it'd be elementary school. And they play the theme too. I think like Odyssey 20, oh my God, what's that movie? The 20,000 Leagues Odyssey.
Under the Sea.
It's like
something like that.
That.
Yeah.
And it's just so remarkable. It goes so terribly wrong in all the, it sounds like the state of our world. I will say that.
Okay, I'm gonna watch it.
Please do.
And as I'm watching it, I'll give commentary about what I'm saying, because I think it'll play in my ears. Okay. Okay, so far, Izzy has sent me this video. They are, the trumpet was just a little under, mama.
Oh. Wait for it.
I'm going to try to edit this into the video. This is beautiful. It sounds like elephants being slaughtered. Oh my God, it's so short and so beautiful. It's literally just like, it's like,
watching you experience that for the first time gave me so much joy. Oh my God, I hope you spread that far and wide with every single human that you encounter.
That is good, Izzy. That is really, oh my God, that really got me good. That really got me good, gal. Oh,
I'm so glad.
Oh my God, that was, you described it perfectly, and then it's still somehow so unexpectedly so much worse than you.
So much worse. Like, you don't understand how it could go that wrong. It's like every single person in the orchestra decided to intentionally fuck it up in the most loud and abrasive way. I mean, I feel like they broke through to parallel universes with that cosmic sound. Like, unreal. It's really good. It's
that
really good.
Is so good. There is nothing better than a good fail, than a good old-fashioned fail. It just, because we all can relate to it. Some of us in front of Alaska and Willem. Just, did you ever watch America's Funniest Home Videos growing up?
Yes, all the time.
I revisited that recently and was like, yeah, there's just something absolutely knock dead hilarious about watching a father get hit in the nuts with a baseball bat. I can watch it.
It feels good.
It feels good.
It's like justice in a way. It's like fucked. But like, it really feeds that part of you that just needs some sort of to thrive off of physical. It's like, I don't want to be violent, but I would love to watch other people get hit in the balls with the baseball bat.
Especially when it's like a tiny little kid. Yeah, you're like,
oh yeah,
this is cute.
Oh yeah,
in every way.
Oh, it is. Or when I love falls. People falling is so funny to me.
One of the very first YouTube videos of all time, the grape lady.
Oh, you see that? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So good.
It sounds fake. It sounds fake because it's so
it's so bad. Do you know what other one's really good? Have you seen the one where the guy falls out? Not falls out, but like in the roller coaster when he kind of like slips out of his harness a little, the belt, the safety belt. And oh, he doesn't fall out, but like he slips below the seat and the person next to him is laughing hysterically while he is screaming bloody murder. He's like, Janice, I'm stuck. Janice, please. Janice. And the other person next to him was like, it is unbelievable.
That is terrifying to me. Funny.
If you watch it, it's less terrifying because you're like, this person's not going to go anywhere. He'll be fine. And you know that.
He's just freaking out.
Yeah, I think if you YouTube Janice, I'm Stuck, that one's really good too. That was like an early one. I remember like going down the rat along with like Charlie Bit Me. It was in that era of like the first YouTube videos too.
Oh, my God. did you have, growing up, a musical theater album that you listened to? Like, were you a theater nerd kid or no?
Oh, all the time. I would, like, sit and, like, go through them. And they changed based on my age or whatever. But I feel like I had a Cats phase when I was really little. It was the first Broadway show I saw. I made my mom buy the VHS, and I watched it every day for a year. Shit you not. Like, I was, and I'd play a different cat every year. So I'd be like, training as a swing. I'd be like, today I'm going to be Electra. Today I'm going to be Bumballerina. Today I'm going to be Demeter. You know, like, I would just be a different cat and pretend like I could dance it. Meanwhile, like, I was like, I would tell people, I was like, I know all the dances to Cats. I know all the parts. I can do everything. And I didn't know shit. I was like 7 years old staring and trying. I was so bad, Tim. I would make my friends at recess play Cats.
What?
Yeah. I directed them as Cats and I would tell them they were doing things bad or good. Oh, God. I was such a little shit.
You told them if they were doing bad or good.
I did.
This Grisabella is bad. I'm going to need
I'd be like, Cassandra, your entrance. You need I need to hold it here. I can't have it this way. It needs to be here. Flat. Hieroglyphic. I didn't say hieroglyphic. I didn't know that word. But I mean, you know, I have a vivid memory of that. Of like, my poor friends. Were they my friends? They probably like talk behind my back about how ridiculous I was, but yeah, I've since calmed down a little bit. I don't force my friends to play dress up with me and act in my shows, but I did for a while.
Imagine if on the Aladdin tour you were like, put the fucking puzzle away. We're doing Cats. Get into the splits now. Someone, I need a Rumple teaser.
Now.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's actually funny. There is a part of me that still does that because we were when we were doing Fly at La Jolla Playhouse when everything shut down. And the day it shut down, we had a party, which we shouldn't have, but we didn't know, realize how bad it
was. No one knew then.
Nobody knew. And we did, because we didn't get to do another show, we decided to pull character names out of a hat. And whoever character you played, you had to play that part. And this was like, we are musical theater nerds. We played each other's roles and walked through the musical numbers of the show and like acted them and laughed and just, and I definitely had a heavy hand in orchestrating that. So
that's,
I got
so fun.
So much joy out of playing, you know, still doing that. But yeah. But anyway, Cats, Wicked. I was a big Wicked girl when I was in seventh grade, as we all are. Drowsy Chaperone was a go-to. Legally Blonde, In the Heights. In the Heights, In the Heights, In the Heights.
So good.
That was a big one for me. Yeah, I love the cast recordings. I did go through a Les Mis phase. I went through a Phantom of the Opera phase, too. That was an interesting one.
That's unique, I think, for someone who becomes a performer. I feel like Phantom of the Opera is usually pretty specific to, like, Midwest moms. No offense.
It is. But my next door neighbor, Haley, who I would have sleepovers with a lot, was obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera. And I don't even know if it was because of the show or the book. She's one of the most intelligent people I know, and even at a very young age had a much higher understanding for art than I did. Like, she was watching V for Vendetta when she was like 10 years old. I don't even understand. And she would like look at this amazing political drama that we are about to experience, and I'd be like, he's wearing a pretty mask.
So, you know that V for Vendetta is set in 2020 and it's about a virus?
Yeah. Oh my God. I didn't realize it was 2020.
Crazy. It's set in 2020.
I watched it this November the 5th.
Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I think you're right.
About
I think
a virus
you're right.
In the future.
It is. Oh.
And it was made in 2005.
I was watching it. I was like, this is very relevant. And an authoritarian government that takes over.
Yeah. And basically the Phantom of the Opera. He is just creeping in that basement.
He's creeping in that basement. Anyway, she turned me on to Phantom of the Opera, so I went on that phase and would sing, you know, Christine Daae in my straight tone soprano way.
I love that so much. Also, when you rewatched V for Vendetta, did you clock Natalie Portman's accent as a British person?
It's horrendous.
I love her. This was really shocking to my system. I could not believe they were letting that happen. The rest of the cast is British, so it's just like blaringly obvious. She's like, oh, it's going to be a they for Vendetta. I was like, what is going on?
It's quite atrocious. And I love dialects. I love accents. And I have a good ear for them. But that was just hysterical. That's fun. We're not good at them. As an American people, we're generally not good at the accents that much.
We're really not. And we get a lot of flack for that. But I will tell you, I did a musical in London like a year and a half ago. And I saw a lot of shows on the West End of British people doing American accents. And honey, I would say 90% of the shows I saw, these actors think that all Americans are in a Tennessee Williams play at all times.
That's true.
I'm not throwing away my shot. No, I'm not throwing away my shot. I was like, what is
It's like, are you
happening?
Dueling in a saloon?
Why are you a cowboy? We don't all... Okay, true. Some of us do talk like that.
This is true.
But not even it was like, these were like the diphthongs where I was like, okay, I feel a little bit better about being an American actor trying to do accents.
That's true. They're definitely difficult all across the board. But there is something delicious about hearing a just terrible, terrible accent, especially when the intention of the acting is just so good and so steeped in reality that you're like, oh, I almost bought in. I was so close.
Yeah, it's like watching like an unbelievable dropped in acting performance, but it's like the wizard and and you're like, whoa, okay, we gotta
just tried it.
I ask everybody on this podcast, who are your Elphabas? Who did you see in Wicked?
Oh my God, I saw this is a specific one. I saw Anna Gasteyer. She was unbelievable.
Right?
I mean, first of all, incredible voice, like whatever, but like the act, she was just giving me Tony Award worthy performance left and right. It was heart-wrenching and she's so leveled and funny because she's hysterical, but yeah, it was great.
So good. Did you see her in New York or in Chicago?
I saw her in New York.
Oh my God. I saw her in Chicago when I was 18. I was like looking at schools and I was looking at schools in Chicago and I got a ticket to Wicked, and I agree completely. I thought she was so, so good in that role.
Yeah.
So funny.
I'm so glad you saw her too. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she was, and it's always so shocking to see like a tried and true TV or movie star who has a legitimate Broadway voice. Like you're like, oh, this isn't good for a celebrity. This is straight up good.
Straight up brilliant. I mean, like, yeah. Whoa. So good. That was one of my favorite performances I've seen. I agree.
Can you fucking imagine, like, what a career her and Nicole Parker just like contributing to two of the most important sketch comedy TV shows in history, and then also being able to sing Elphaba is so insane.
I love it so much. It's so great. I'm here for it. I don't mind if they have the chops. Please give it to us.
Is there anything else about your slumber parties growing up that you remember?
Oh my gosh. I would have a lot of slumber parties almost every weekend. We'd play Manhunt a lot, which was fun. When I was at my friend Madeline's house, she had brothers, older brothers, and so like their friends would be over all the time, and like at night we would go out and just play Manhunt in the yard, which is ridiculous. But
where'd you grow up?
Was a big one. Rockland County, New York. So I am from a town called Suffern. Well, I'm not from there, but like I'm from Queens, but like moved to Rockland County. And yeah, it's not the greatest. I'm not a fan, to be completely honest.
Is that Long Island?
But no, it's across the river from Westchester. About 45 minutes north.
Okay.
There are parts that are great. It's just like politically not my favorite place. However, there are certain people that I've met that are lovely. It breeds good people. You just, you know, have to find them in certain pockets. But my slumber parties were always fun. Manhunt was a big one. We go on walks. I remember one slumber party. We'd like have weekends where we would like Friday to Sunday, we'd sleep over each other's houses. And there was one weekend where it was a Sunday and I was walking with my friends Madeline and Shannon, and we were walking down the street, and I think we were in sixth grade or fifth grade, and we desperately did not want to go to school the next day. So we were like, oh my God, we're going to all plan to be sick, pretend to be sick, stay home, and IM each other the entire day. like literally just be on IM. And so I remember passing around a Coke can, like to share each other's germs to try to get sick. So that, I mean, and like, that was the plan that we came up with during our sleepover.
And then
we all
sick.
Did. We all
Let's
stayed home and swindled
sick.
Our parents. Let's get fucking
Let's
sick.
Get
like now, why
sick.
Would you wish that on yourself? I would never wish that on myself now, but like, yeah, we all swindled our parents into letting us stay home for the day, and we were on IM, AOL Instant Messenger, the entire day, and be like, LOL, OMG, look what we did.
Oh my God, your teacher at school that day must have just been walking around. If I was that teacher, I'd be like, These bad, bad kids think they're pulling a fast one on me. I got a racer duty for this click tomorrow. That you really...
Oh, I got eraser duty.
Eraser duty. Clap those erasers, young ladies. I would have been... That is so good. Sorry, you had another one. I interrupted you.
Oh, no, it's okay. That was good. We'd watch movies. Forts. I did forts a lot, too.
We've loved never talked about forts on this podcast, and that's such slumber party culture. Forts.
Oh, yeah. Forts where you take over an entire room and then you sleep in them. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. We would bring different furniture in, and you would have your hair ties that you would use or rubber bands that you would tie the sheets to make sure they stayed up. And then you bring in a lamp to give lighting, and then blankets and then your bean bags or your teddy bears or whatever, stuffed animals, just to make it homey. And then you'd create a story, a narrative line about camping in the woods, and a bear comes in and you gotta run from the bear, and one person plays a bear. I was always the bear.
No. Because you were the only one with the range. The only one with the range who can play.
Yeah, that's what it was. And one final slumber party thing. I have a very... All of my birthday parties would end in a sleepover where everybody would come over, but my five best girlfriends would stay and sleep over. And I kind of always felt a little bit like the odd one out in terms of what we wanted to talk about and other things. And I vividly remember them coming over, them sleeping over, them talking about, I think this was seventh grade probably. So we were starting, a lot of my friends were starting to kiss boys.
Yes.
And kiss other people. And I was just not interested. I was like, this is so boring to me. I don't want to talk about who's hot or not. And I remember vividly being like, can we talk about something else other than boys? And then pausing, looking at each other and be like, no, and laughing at me.
No.
And I remember rolling over and going to sleep because I was like, I'm bored at my own sleepover.
Oh, my God. You know what? Good for seventh grade you for putting up the boundary. You said,
yeah.
I'm going to say what I want right now. But that is so, that just sent so many memories in my mind. If that, there's nothing worse than when you say something vulnerable and then your friends look at each other and then laugh. That's tough.
I mean, but I think everybody's a little shit in middle school and elementary school. So I give them passes because we don't have filters then and we don't really know how to process our own feelings.
No, and the insecurity is running rampant. It's rampant. When you first figure out how to hide stuff about yourself. And mask it with something that you think is going to protect you, which usually is bullying. But that's what that time is for sixth through eighth grade. And a lot of people's hormones are going crazy. Mm-hmm. I was
Have you watched Pen 15?
Izzy, I'm so deeply obsessed with that show.
Deeply. It got so much right.
It's absolutely so perfect. And good for them for being this is the story we want to tell and this is how we're going to do it. Because it's so unique and so niche seeming, I'm sure, to a baby boomer to be like, what, you want to do a deep dive into the racial politics of the Spice Girls? And they're like, yeah, bitch, we do.
Yeah.
And AIM it's, and... Go ahead.
It's unbelievable. But I cut you off when you were about to talk about your own middle school identity and self. And I wanted to hear that. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, there. I was such a late bloomer. I didn't hit puberty until I was 16. And I really hated that too. I was I obviously didn't want to talk about girls, but there was no way for me to express that. So I just remember as a little queer kid thinking that same feeling that you had, but I didn't say it ever. I would think to myself, I wish sex didn't exist. If sex didn't exist, my life would be so much better. Cause I was like, you know, I was like, I can pass, I can relate, I can figure out so much about this world, but this is the one thing that I know they're never going to accept. And then instead of being like you were at that slumber party, which I so wish I did, but instead of that, I developed this fake persona on top of like this mask of like, okay, well then you have to figure out how to like football and how to like basketball and how to like play it their way. And even worse, I like relied on my wit because I was like, I know this is something I have power over everyone with. So I think I know I did a lot of like really things that I now look back on. I'm like, oh, that was not my best self in any way. But yeah, it's hard to blame that generation. I was before the pandemic was teaching kids that age, and it is really, really heartwarming to see how much they are changing in general. The kids will always have that thing that we're talking about of like trying to figure out how to grow up. But a seventh grader in my acting class was sharing his vision dream board. And he said he started sharing that he hopes that there's less racism in the world. He was like, I'm Mexican. And there's so many people that say horrible things about me and my family and people who look like me. And I want that to go away. And then he said, and I've never told anyone this before, but I'm bisexual. And the class stood up and they were like, people started standing and they were like, whoever you are and whatever you want to express is good and is right. And we're here for you. And then they were like, can we hug? They asked for consent. They were like, can we hug you? And he was like, yeah. Oh, and he started crying. And they all started hugging. They all got in a group and were hugging. He wasn't exactly making friends in this class. Like, this was probably like the ninth class that they know each other very well, like 3-hour classes. Yeah. And this really, like, his ability to be so honest really opened up this, like, beautiful friendship and connection with these kids. And the way that they handled it was so, I did literally nothing. I was like ready to step in if someone said or did something that could have been damaging to him, but nobody did. It was like so beautiful.
That is such, that gives me hope. That story really does, because I do feel like hate is taught, love is not. I mean, love is inherent, like everybody's born with that. And like the fact that those kids who were middle school age were able to embrace this boy and stand up for him and tell him that he was valid and loved and seen and okay. Like, just that is so wonderful. And I'm so grateful that you shared that story. Thank you for that. What an awesome class you've had.
It was really, yeah, I really, really have learned and gotten a lot of joy from this next generation of kids. They're really, I think, really going to help us turn this all around. I could talk to you for so long, but we do have to end at some point.
I guess
we're
going to
do more slumber party games over on the Patreon. I'm going to have a little Mary F. Baby. Kill for you and a little Would You Rather for you.
I'm so excited.
Before we go, where can the people follow you or find you?
The people can follow me at, I'm terrible at voguing. The people can follow me at IZZYMCCALLA at Izzy McCalla. On Instagram, that's it. That's where I am. Follow my shenanigans there.
Follow her there. Are you named after Izzy Stevens from Grey's Anatomy?
No. No, I am not. Absolutely not. But I do share her love of baked goods.
Oh, my God. Were you a Grey's person?
No, I was not. And I actually, my roommates are, and I just got into it this pandemic, but then I had to stop because I'm also a hypochondriac and it's kind of triggering like some latent hypochondria. And I was like, nope, can't do it anymore. I stopped after season 6. if you know what that means.
I know exactly what that means. So that's a really good place to stop because it starts to get so crazy. I love that show with my whole heart. I stopped after season 10, Sandra Oh's last season. But let's just say it's a wild ride. it's a wild, wild ride.
Shonda, you gave us a roller coaster.
Shonda really said, she said, oh, you thought you knew what could happen in a hospital. You don't know. You don't know the half of it. It's so good. And you can follow me at TeamMurray06 on all platforms. If you enjoyed this conversation, go ahead and rate, subscribe, and review this podcast. I'd love that so much. And if you want to see more, head on over to the Patreon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next week. Bye.